We'll mention Patty Beavers is in the room. We may or may not ask her anything. Good morning. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm good today.
Good. I'm glad. They're always happy to sit to hear that. And being good on a Friday, I think, is particularly important. Kind of sets a tone for a good weekend, don't you think?
Sure does.
Yeah. Hey, I know you guys have been busy. Sometimes we talk about your adult programs and standing by as a court advocate when people need to go to court for a protective order and that sort of thing. But you're also busy in schools talking with people who are still kind of learning how to get along with each other.
Well, that would actually be our prevention specialist.
Right, okay. But I know, and you're here primarily to talk about teen dating violence, but it all kind of knits together somewhere along the line. So you get to talk to them, or I guess get to talk to them after something has already occurred, as opposed to trying to prevent something from happening.
Yes.
But
yes.
Either way, it's kind of two parts of the same spectrum.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't chuckle about that. I just, I guess sometimes we do because it's a forced laugh. But people do, get out on a date and instead of enjoying some time together, end up doing things they probably shouldn't be doing on a date.
Yes.
And I don't know any better way to put it.
Yeah.
You hear what they have to say and hear their stories and then try to help pick up the pieces.
Yep, that's what I'm there for, and hopefully they will be receptive to that.
Yeah, and I hope most of the time they are. Maybe not everything you have to say, but at least mm-hmm. some of it soaks in now, and some of it maybe, in a day or two, and after they've had a time to sleep on it.
Yeah, that's the goal at least.
Yeah.
But usually if they come in on their own without parents telling them to, then usually they are more receptive to mm-hmm. that information, and they're more resistant if the parents make them come in.
Makes sense, just because being a teen, and it's been a long time for me, but being a teen, I like to do what I want to do as opposed to what mom and dad made me do.
Exactly.
And frequently on something like this, if, they probably, mom and dad were, I'm guessing, harping at me 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times before I actually said, okay, I'll go in and talk to them.
Yeah, there's a big difference. You usually got to let the teen, or make the teen feel like it's their idea.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be agreeing.
Yeah, and hopefully that way they can agree to some of the things you want to talk to them about.
Yeah.
What types of problems in general, and we can get as specific as you want to, but I want to start off in general, what types of problems do you see frequently? Is there a general, he hits her, she yells at him? What happens on the date that you have to pick up the pieces from?
Well, let me go ahead and start with what teen dating violence is.
Good idea.
Because I think that's going to kind of give you the whole perspective, because mm-hmm. every situation is going to be different, and some may experience any, like all of them, or just a few of these out of the definition.
Okay.
So, teen dating violence is physical, sexual, psychological, or emotional violence within a dating relationship, which also includes stalking. And this can also occur electronically or between a current or former dating partner. So, they may have all of those aspects of the definition, or they may have like just one or two.
Mm-hmm.
So it really just depends on each case on what
okay.
I'm going to see.
Okay. And then frequently you get to, I'll say if the teen comes in on their own as opposed to, again, like we said, mom and dad, mm-hmm. then are they able to be more upfront with you as far as it went on as opposed to, having the conversation scripted for them by mom and dad?
Well, usually once we build that rapport, mm-hmm. then they'll start being more trusting and start realizing what they can share and that they can be more open and honest. I always let them know up front what things I would have to report to mm-hmm. either parents or police or child welfare, depending on what the situation is.
Because there are certain laws that say, like a teacher, if they find out about this or that, they are required by law to report it.
Yes. But usually once they get that rapport and they start feeling more comfortable, they will be more willing to open up and share and let me know, hey, I got back with the person, or, okay, this is what's going on still. They may not let their parents know all that information, which is fine, as long as they're talking about with somebody.
Mm-hmm. and somebody that they can hopefully trust telling you that it's not going to leave the room unless it is required by law, and they hopefully understand that as opposed to in one ear and out the other.
Yeah, and I usually remind people of that often, especially teenagers, because they don't always remember that information. And so it's always nice to have that reminder, remember what you tell me, stays confidential unless it falls under these requirements.
Mm-hmm. And I can see how you would have to mention that probably every time you get together with them, at least for the first 5, 6, 7, 8 times.
Yeah.
So really you're kind of in the business of keeping a lot of secrets and holding things so that you can make some recommendations for how to move along.
Yeah, pretty much.
Makes it interesting life, I'm sure. You've got some examples for us to kind of look at some of those situations that people may have to report?
Things that I would have to report would be like if there's a... with teen dating violence, it's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
If a teenager is under 16, where 16 and older is consent.
Okay.
And the boyfriend is 18 or older. Of course, some things I may have to report.
Mm-hmm.
But or if the teenager has a child and they reported abuse to that child. If they said, hey, I'm going to kill myself or I want to kill myself, and they kind of tell me how they want to do it,
mm-hmm.
I'd have to report that.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they said, well, I'm going to kill my abuser, I would have to report that.
Sure.
So those are basically the stuff that I'd have to report.
Okay. It kind of gives us a general framework to work for. Mm-hmm. And just because I think a lot of those would be fall under common sense, but it's nice if we kind of get the examples out there.
Yes.
Okay. And then again, is it just you and the individual, or is there sometimes a third party in the room, or how does that situation work?
Typically it's me and the individual. If they have a child and DHS is involved, sometimes I'll call a meeting between the DHS worker, the client, and me,
mm-hmm.
just to make sure we're all on the same page and we know what all is going on, what our goals are to help the client.
Okay.
But typically it's between me and the client.
I'm sure we all would say that this sort of problem is just all too common, that it probably happens a lot more than we would realize, because mm-hmm. a lot of it goes unreported. It doesn't show up on the statistics for court or whatever until it's escalated way on down the road.
Yes. And there are some statistics that I have
mm-hmm.
that... nationwide, it's actually almost 1.5 million high school students experience physical abuse from a dating partner in one single year.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
But I also, if I can find it on here, I have some statistics of how many don't report.
And while you're looking...
I don't remember it offhand, though.
It's something that I'm sure... the people want to hold that inside and not to not talk about something like this happened to me. And so it probably, again, while you're looking for those numbers, I'm going to make a general assumption that it probably happens a time or two or three or four or five before somebody actually says something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's actually 33% of teens who were in violent relationships ever told someone about the abuse. So that's not a whole lot.
No, that means that there's a whole lot of whatever going on below the surface that maybe it only happened once, if it had, you know, but maybe mm-hmm. it happened 10 times and we still didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
It makes it a tough field for us to really quantify mm-hmm. what's going on and how it all happens.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the times, the young people, they will believe that, you know, it's just a love pat. Or it's just, you know, maybe that's a pet name. Or they'll find reasons to justify and say that it's okay. But in reality, it's probably not going to go away. And it's going to turn into something more than just a little love pat or,
mm-hmm.
you know, a pet name.
Right.
But a lot of times, like, even the parents, like, they think that they can, I'd be able to recognize if my child was in a domestic violence relationship. but some of the statistics here say 82% of parents feel confident that they would recognize the signs of their child was experiencing dating abuse. A majority of parents, 58%, could not correctly identify all the warning signs of abuse. So we need to educate the parents as well as the children.
Mm-hmm.
So that way the parents hopefully would be able to say, oh, the sign's not right.
And so part of it, and I think we'll run through some of those here in just a moment, just so that we all have an idea of, you know, what's going on. And it's one of those things, I think, that once we hear it, we'll say, oh, yeah. But if you were to ask me what's the list, I probably couldn't name, you know, even half of them, I'm guessing. So we'll take a break, and we will continue with Melissa and see if we can both learn something here when we continue in just a moment.
Bartlesville First Baptist Church is focused on the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. As we learn the God's Word, love God's people, and live God's mission, this vision will continue to thrive until He comes. We are committed to vibrant worship, relevant Bible teaching, genuine community, and the urgent spreading of this gospel. We are resolved. We will not be silent. Come worship with us at First Baptist Church, 405 South Cherokee in Bartlesville. Services are 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. each Sunday.
AM 1400, 93.3 FM, K1, a community connection. Talking with Melissa Ruprecht from Family Crisis and Counseling Center, particularly teen dating violence. And I'm sure this has always gone on to a certain extent, but because of the way our society is, and because of there was no such thing as a cell phone to stalk kids with when a lot of the adults were growing up, it has complicated the matter a lot.
Yes, it has, because there's many ways you can hack into their GPS. You can excuse me, you can text them nonstop. There's always a way you can get a hold of that mm-hmm. that partner.
Yep.
And before, there used to not be. You had to always call the home phone, which the parents can intercede.
Right.
But with the cell phones now, the kids have them attached to their hip, pretty much.
And many youngsters or even a lot of adults use the cell phone as the alarm clock, as opposed to using mm-hmm. an alarm clock for an alarm clock. So the phone has to be on while they're sleeping, and mm-hmm. therefore mom and dad can't, you know, have it sitting out in the, I don't care, the kitchen, the living room, someplace other than the youngster's bedroom.
And that would depend on the rules. I think that a parent should take away the phone after a certain time of night.
Mm-hmm.
That way the kid is not up playing on their phone. They can't, and if they would be in a dating violence relationship, the parents can intercede with that.
Okay.
And it also helps the kid get more sleep.
Do you think?
So, yeah. So if the parents can set those ground rules that after this time, your phone is off, or and they don't have access to it, then that can help do some prevention.
So is that some of the recommendations you make? Maybe, you know, if a parent is involved in the situation, that you can talk to mom and dad. And of course, I want to get some of these other signs that we were talking about before mm-hmm. we took the break. But you're also there to help suggest some rules that maybe mom and dad haven't thought about.
Yeah, when I meet with the child, most of the time I meet by themselves, but there's one session I would do once a month with the parent, and that would be a safety plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so the child and the parent would be able to come up together a safety plan on how to keep this child safe.
Okay. And can you give us some examples of some of the types of things you talk about on that? Maybe one or two recommendations that whether there's something going on, maybe the youngster isn't even in a dating relationship right now, but still some things that mom and dad can profit from? Like that phone off sort of thing. You know.
Okay. So safety skills?
Yeah.
Okay. We can teach them to always know what's going on around them, have a curfew, always know who the child is with.
Mm-hmm.
So if they have that good rapport with the child, you know, the child's not going to have a problem saying, well, I'm with so-and-so and I'm here, you know, and set those ground rules. You need to be home by a certain time, and hey, I'm going to call to check up on you and see where you're at and what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of things can help to keep the child safe.
Okay. Okay. And you were talking about some of the warning signs that, that mom and dad may or may not mm-hmm. recognize. And like I said, I think a lot of these are going to be aha moments as soon as you, you mention them that, yeah, I probably should have known yeah. that, but I don't.
Yeah.
So what are some of those things that, that we can list out for folks?
Typically when teens are in violent relationships, they'll withdraw. They may start acting a little off, like if their phone rings, they feel like they have to answer it. They may be always on their phone. I mean, I know they're always on their phone now, but it'd be more than just texting somebody or playing games. It'd be like they're clenched through their phone waiting, because if not, there's going to be consequences from the partner if they don't answer. And they could have random bruises around that if you ask them how this happened, it doesn't quite match up with how the bruise could have happened. They may withdraw from their friends because usually partners are like, well, I don't like that friend. You can't hang out with them.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes even in teen dating relationships, they'll kind of make them withdraw from their family because they don't want them to be around certain family members.
So some of those are going back to the same sort of things that Patty and I would talk about even in an adult situation where one person is trying to exercise more control over somebody else than most people would say they should.
Yes. Yes. It's not that much different than an adult relationship. The main difference is in a teen dating violence relationship, the teenagers don't usually live together. There are cases where they would, and that would be if the parents, you know, didn't care if they lived with each other. But most of the time, they live in two different places.
Mm-hmm. And that, I guess from a certain extent, that is one reason why a lot of this is going on over the phone as opposed to maybe face-to-face.
Yes, yeah. And if it goes on over the phone, it's easier to control as a parent. But you got to know the warning signs.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really good movie that Lifetime has shown. It is called Finding Ophelia.
Mm-hmm.
And
been around for about 10 years or so.
That is about teen dating violence and is a really, really good example of what a teen dating violent relationship looks like. So if you haven't seen that movie, I would recommend you watching it.
Okay. Check out Lifetime Movie Channel or go to some of the streaming services. Probably is available on...
It's on Netflix.
Okay. So an opportunity for mom and dad to educate themselves a little bit on that one.
Yes.
If somebody has questions, mom and dad, or for that matter, maybe even just friends, family members, they can contact you and get some more information on
yes.
how they can get hooked up on some of these.
Yeah, and they can contact anybody within the agency as well. So if they needed answers pretty quickly and I'm in session with somebody or not available, they could get one of the, like Patty or Stacy,
mm-hmm.
that could also help them with those answers.
Okay. And I've heard this phone number so many times, I've got it memorized, but I'd rather hear it from you guys. So again, if somebody would like to find out more, what's the phone number for FCC?
918-336-1188.
Okay. And again, you're just down the street, right on Frank Phillips. Pretty easy to sign if you want to just walk in the door and say, hey, we need to talk.
Yes.
Thank you very much. And Patty Beavers, you didn't have to say a thing, but thanks for coming
perfect
in this morning.
Day. Thank you.
That's a Community Connection on AM 1400 K1.
ONN News, I'm Randy Renner.